Welcome to the Hopeful Activist podcast from the Praxis Centre for Hope and Activism. We are all about exploring our role in God's mission to bring hope and transformation. So welcome back to the Hopeful Activist podcast for the first in our new series called The Church And. I'm Abby Thomas, and today we're talking about the church and growth. And if you haven't done so already, it'd be really worth listening to our episode called What is the Gospel from October, where we try to answer that nice, easy question. Today I'm speaking to Hannah Rich from Theos, which is a Christian think tank, about her research into church growth and social action. And I'm really looking forward to reframing the debate. Welcome to the Hopeful Activist podcast, Hannah.
Thanks for having me on.
Really looking forward to our conversation. But before we start, I just want to give another plug for the Praxis Labs, which start on the 8th of April. It's once a week for 6 weeks, and you get high quality teaching on the theology of activism and advice on how to put your hope for change into action in an ethical and constructive way. And you also get a session with a life coach to help you work out your own values. And I can't recommend it enough. And the details for how to sign up are in the show notes. And someone who did the Praxis Labs is Lau Chikan, who's since set up the Men's Advocacy Network. And you can join in one of their events on the 25th of March with some fantastic speakers. The details for that are also in the show notes. So Hannah, welcome. First of all, where are we speaking to you from and how are you today?
I'm speaking to you from my childhood bedroom in Staffordshire, actually. So I've been spending the lockdown period at my parents' house. So yeah, it's been good.
Do you still have your sort of childhood things in your room, or have you moved on?
Yeah, some of them are still. There's no posters on the wall though, which is good for kind of Zoom backgrounds.
Oh, that is good. So you're a senior researcher working on theology and economic inequality at Theos, which is a Christian think tank. So today we're going to be talking about your report, Growing Good, which is in partnership with the Church Urban Fund. Do you want to tell me a bit about the report?
Yeah, so we launched the report in November last year, and it was the kind of culmination of a three-year project that I'd been working on, looking at the relationship between church growth, social action and discipleship, specifically in the Church of England. But I think that the findings, and we can talk more about those, are really relevant, not just to the Church of England, but to kind of the whole of the church in England and beyond. So it was a big piece of research. As I said, it took 3 years, and included in that was over 350 interviews with people in 66 different parishes. So I spent a lot of time on trains, which is quite a different way of life, I guess, from where we are now. It's quite a strange thing, having spent 2 years travelling all over the country to now not really going anywhere, obviously. But in that was hearing the stories and the kind of experiences of people in a diverse range of Church of England parishes who were engaged in social action, and who were seeing their churches grow through that, both numerically and spiritually. So not just it's not just talking about how the church can grow bigger through serving its community, but also how individuals grow in faith, and how the church as a community grows deeper as well as bigger through its involvement in social action.
And were there any particular places that you visited or people that you spoke to that surprised you?
There were so many. It was a real experience actually getting to visit them all. So just kind of briefly, within those 66 parishes, we tried really hard that the whole breadth of the Church of England, which is a massive institution, would be represented within that. And it's really hard to do that. There's 12,000 parishes. And so to represent them brilliantly within 66 isn't easy. But I think there were parishes of every size, every kind of geography. There was one in every diocese. So I've literally been kind of everywhere in the country, to tiny rural villages, inner city parishes, estate churches, the whole kind of gamut of places that the Church of England serves, or that the church serves. And I think that kind of I wouldn't say surprised me, but just really encouraged me that it looks very different in different places. So what social action looks like in a tiny village might look quite different to what it looks like in an inner city estate, but actually that the church is present in both those places and trying to do something for its community. I think that kind of the way that that spans the different contexts was really encouraging. Mm.
And in our documentary that I mentioned, we looked at the tension between social action and evangelism. Do you think that social action and evangelism are false binaries?
I think they are. And I think that more and more people kind of in recent years have begun to see them as not kind of opposing sides of church. There's been a tendency, I think, to have them as binary parts of church life, that the people that are kind of typically involved in one of them might not be involved in the other, and vice versa. And actually, to an extent, historically, that the churches that kind of are biased towards one might not be the same churches that are engaged in the other as communities or as kind of strands of denominations, I guess. But I think we're seeing, particularly recently and definitely came out through this bit of research, that actually they go together really well and that they can be done kind of hand in hand. And as I said, that we saw through the research churches that are growing bigger and stronger and deeper through their engagement in social action. So it's not kind of one or the other, it's do them both, and they go together really well. Mm.
And I think sometimes for Christian activists, there's a kind of tension between seeing social action as a kind of tactical thing in order to bring people into the church, but also knowing, you know, and being uncomfortable with that, but also knowing that when people come to know Jesus, that's when they really are transformed. I don't know how you found that tension.
I think people sometimes expect there to be that tension more than it actually plays out in reality. So to kind of talk about one of the findings that I found the most fascinating from this research, and definitely not one that I'd anticipated going into it, was the number of people for whom being involved in social action as a volunteer or as an activist was their first encounter with the church. So I think when we went into this, looking at what's the relationship between social action and people coming to faith, it was very obvious to look at that in terms of people who come to the projects because they're the beneficiaries, or they're kind of receiving from those projects, and then they come to faith. And that, I think, is when you know, you mentioned that it being a kind of tactical thing. I think that's the direction that people sort of imagine when they have that in mind. But actually, the number of people for whom they were activists, they had that sort of personality type and they wanted to be involved in something, and they knew that their local church was somewhere that they could outwork that. They weren't particularly interested in faith, or they didn't think they were, but they knew that the church was somewhere they could really practically get involved. And through that, actually did become involved in the church life, the life of the church and faith, and discover faith through that. And that for me was really interesting, because I think we don't always invite people to join in with us in that way. So we might invite someone to come to a toddler group if they're in that demographic. We might invite someone to come to an Alpha course, to come to a worship service. But we're not always as quick, I think, to invite people to come and volunteer. We're often quite kind of surprised when people want to join in when they're not already part of the church. But I think that whole side of it, that sort of sense in which actually when the church is doing this social action and activism, it's really attractive to people outside it. And that does draw people into a church to a far greater extent than you might imagine.
And I was really startled by the statistic that 93% of Church of England churches are involved in some way with food banks. That's quite an encouraging statistic for me.
Yeah, that's something that I think is really encouraging, and is a really interesting kind of paradox that we talk about in the report. And that's kind of where the idea for it, or the need for this bit of research, came from, I think, that there are so many different statistics that you could quote about the Church of England and the church more generally, I think, that seem to contradict each other. So if you were to look at the Sunday morning attendance figures, you would imagine, I mean, they've fallen by between 15 and 20% over the last decade. And so you would have a particular picture of the church if you imagined that, and it probably wouldn't be a very good one. You wouldn't imagine a thriving church if you just knew the statistic that the attendance has fallen by that much. But by contrast, if you only had the statistic that 93% of parishes were involved in food banks, you would imagine a very different church, a very different picture of what it means for the church to be thriving. And actually, those are statistics from the same year about the same group of parishes, and they don't seem to fit together. And that's kind of where this research came into thinking that actually we know that the church is contributing more and more, not just through food banks, but through, you know, toddler groups, night shelters, all of those things. And actually that 93% was from before the pandemic. You know, that's before we kind of saw this massive growth in the need for these activities. And so what does it mean for the church to be the church that is seeming to be in decline at the same time as the national need for what the church offers in a very practical sense is as great as it's ever been, if not greater.
Mm. And what does it mean?
Well, I think it you know, it means for the church to kind of reconsider what it thinks it is and reimagine what it is. So one of the reasons that the church is seen to be in decline is because we look mainly at Sunday mornings. And I don't want to get into a whole debate about whether the church is just a Sunday morning or kind of, you know, the rest of the week matters as well.
I think you'll be preaching to the choir on that one.
Spoiler alert that I do think the rest of the week matters, that if we only count who's there on a Sunday, we miss a massive, not only in the sort of statistical terms, but we miss a massive part of the life of the church and who is connected to the church. So there are a huge, much larger group of people, I think, who engage with the church through social action or who kind of identify with the church and having benefited from it in one way or another, whether that's through a messy church service or through having been to the food bank or having been to the lunch club or just having kind of recognised that the church is there and that be something that's important to them, that we just completely miss if we only look on Sunday mornings. And so not only is it kind of difficult if we only count the size of the church on a Sunday morning, but if we track whether or not the church is growing based on whether the number of people on a Sunday morning has grown or declined over the last 10 years, and we just kind of draw that as a straight line, then there's a huge amount of context and richness and wonderful stuff that is happening in the church that is just missed if that's the way we look at it.
And changing tack slightly, something that we often talk about on The Hopeful Activist is hospitality. And I was really interested in the ideas that you explore on that. And you say that there's a risk that social action can also be transactional rather than transformative. In what ways do you think hospitality has that potential to shift power dynamics?
Yeah, so I think one of the important things that I think I would like to say about the research, and that I do say, is that we're not suggesting churches need to do huge amounts more of projects. You know, that they may be already running things, but actually the difference between projects that lead the church to grow and, you know, the same activity that might not lead the church to grow is the kind of the culture and the ethos around it. And hospitality and generosity are two of the characteristics that we identify as being really important to that. So you can do exactly the same activity, be it a food bank, be it a meal, whatever. And in some cases that will lead to growth and in others it doesn't. And hospitality is really important in that, because that is the culture around it. Do people feel welcome? How welcome do they feel? Do they feel that they come in, they get their food parcel, they leave? Or do they feel that they came in and had a conversation with someone and a cup of coffee and something relational happened? You know, in both those examples, the end result for the person in terms of the practical thing is the same, that they come to the church and they go away having got the food for the week, which is, you know, kind of the critical thing in some ways. But actually, whether or not that's done in a way that makes them feel welcome and makes them experience hospitality, lets them experience the hospitality of the church, is really crucial in terms of whether they have a different relationship with the church or a better relationship, better kind of impression of what the church is. And so one of the other examples that I would use for that is that in churches, we often have meals together. There are often in a church, in the life of a church, in the course of a week, lots of different meal tables that happen. And it can be really obvious to think about that. It might be a bring and share lunch after church on a Sunday. It might be the communion table. It might be the lunch club during the week, or the sandwiches provided for the kind of the holiday club for children during the school holidays or whatever. And there are lots of different places during the week at which the church feeds people, quite literally. Mm-hmm. But so they can be kind of examples of hospitality to varying extents. And I think one of the things we think about is there that ethos of hospitality in all of those things? Does anyone feel welcome to all of those tables? Or are there a different group of people who might feel welcome to a particular one but not to another. So if the people who are welcome to the lunch club table and come in and feel that is their place, but would they get the same welcome if they turned up on a Sunday morning? And in some cases, and in most cases, I hope that that is the case. But I think hospitality there is what takes that kind of practical thing into something that can be spiritual and can lead to the church growing.
And you make quite a lot of recommendations at the end of the report in terms of church growth. For those of us who aren't in church leadership, what would you like us to do? What's your message, I guess, is a better question. What's your message for us?
Yeah, so the kind of the first one is, it goes back to the stuff that I started by talking about, that think about your social action as something that people can be invited to. You know, I talk about a church that is as quick to invite people to join in with what it's doing as it is to invite them to a service or a course or whatever else is being put on. And not to be surprised when that happens, to kind of expect that when we're doing something good as a church, people will want to join in with it, not to be kind of surprised when they do or when that comes along. So I think to think about the whole of church life as something that is kind of integrated. So, you know, not to have these as the two binaries, but to think about them together and to kind of imagine how they might be put together in what we invite people to join in with. And I think also to think about the culture of our social action. So I talked about that in terms of hospitality and generosity. But to think about, you know, who is welcome where, in the way that I just talked about, that doesn't involve doing a huge amount more stuff. So I really wouldn't want anyone's takeaway from the research to be that they have to set up 5 new projects and that's how the church is going to grow. We're definitely not suggesting that there's a kind of magic bullet that if you do a particular amount of social action, your church will grow by a certain amount. You know, that's not what we set out to find at all. But that if you do your social action in a certain way, so thinking about the ethos around it, is it somewhere where a huge range of people are able to participate and get involved? Is it kind of adaptable? One of the other characteristics is kind of adaptability and resilience, you know, being able to embrace the complexity of people's lives when they come in and not be daunted by that, and then not see that as a kind of barrier, you know, when people have complicated life circumstances, whatever those are, not to see those as a barrier to their involvement in the church.
And I know that as I read it, I found it encouraging because it made me think about the things that we are doing right and also challenged just to think, like you said, just slight adjustments. You gave the example of a church in the report that all it meant was opening their doors, I think.
Yeah, that was a really, really simple but actually really powerful example of a church that were running a coffee morning, and they called the coffee morning Open Church. And their kind of vision for this was that the whole community would be welcome in, that the church was open and anyone could come in for a cup of coffee. And they really believed that that was kind of what they were doing, and that was definitely their vision for it. But it was slightly hindered by the fact that for the entire time that Open Church was taking place, both of the church doors were shut. And then no one had really kind of noticed this until someone new came along and pointed it out. But actually, you know, that in that sense, just opening the doors meant that the exact same activity that they were still doing, people walking past knew was happening. Often, I think people walking past the church might, and particularly in that case, might not have known or seen from the outside the amount of life that was going on inside. Because if the doors are shut, then it doesn't matter how much life is happening inside. If you can't see in and see that it's happening, then no one's going to be kind of drawn or feel that it's open for them to come into. So it's not necessarily about the church, you know, looking really slick from the outside and looking fantastic, but it has to look open. People have to know from walking past that the church hasn't shut. The number of examples I kind of came across where people said, you know, when I first came to this parish, someone said, oh, is there still a church there? I just assumed it had shut. And that wasn't because they weren't doing anything. It wasn't because they weren't really faithful and there every Sunday and had a really vibrant worshipping life. It was just that from the outside, you never would have known that.
Brilliant. Well, I would recommend reading the report, especially if you're someone who has is in church leadership, because it's very clear and accessible and hopeful, I think. I hope you'd say.
I hope so. Yeah, I really hope that it's as encouraging as it is challenging, definitely. Mm.
Well, thank you so much, Hannah, and thank you for listening. If you've enjoyed this episode, why not send the link to a friend? And don't forget to sign up for the Praxis Labs, and I'll put the details of the Growing Good report in the show notes as well, so you can download it from their website. Or I think you can buy it. Can you buy it, Hannah?
You can buy it if you want a paper copy, but you can download it for free.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.